Lyra Richter, Mr. Milos Payek from Network Engineering. We also have Martin from LTE Dynamics and Arnon.
Yeah.
And we are still waiting for a few more folks from LTE to join in.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Janice. For the switch team members, how's our audio quality today?
Loud and clear.
All right, thank you. For LTE Dynamics team, thank you for taking time to join us. Give everybody another few more minutes to finish joining in. For those that have joined in, once we get everybody on, we're going to have the LTE Dynamics team do a round of introductions with names, title, and responsibilities for the project. And before that, I'm going to have Janice go ahead and queue up the recording today's call. Janice, if you would, please.
This meeting is being recorded.
Thank you, Janice. And while we're waiting for everybody to finish joining in from LTE Dynamics, in the invitation that was sent out, you'll find the attached PDF document in the notes section. It's titled AR-5300 Las Vegas 7 Kickoff Meeting Agenda. We'll be referencing that document as we go through today's briefing. We'll be starting on page 3, where you'll see a representation of the cabinet switches provided. Does anybody need to re-forward that document out?
I'm actually currently asking Martin.
Okay, very good. And I'm sorry, who's this speaking, please?
This is Arnon talking.
Arnon, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. I hope you're all well.
So far, everybody's been staying healthy and taking care of what needs to be taken care of and staying safe.
I think right now with this current situation, that is the best course of action.
I just received on financial news that Texas has mandated face coverings in public as the infection near hospitalization soar. That's just the highlights that just came through just now. Are you also located in Houston?
No, I am actually located in the Netherlands.
Oh, so far away from Texas.
Yeah, quite a while.
I was just checking out your guys' website a few minutes before we jumped on today's call and checking it out. Looks like a very interesting product. Will that product be able to be, is your intention that you be able to deliver those services globally?
That's probably more for June to answer when he gets here. We just consult help with his network for him.
I see. Certainly with the price point and channel lineup that they've secured, that's a pretty compelling price and looks to be definitely of interest as a product. Because I don't know, is the product actually, is it already rolled out and being delivered, or is it getting ready to be released?
I think a lot of it's in testing phase for him. Again, it's probably more Juneware. Just consult on the network side. I don't know much of the other side just yet.
Waiting noted. Yeah, I tried the sample page. We'll be on board. Noted. I was just trying out the sample page by putting in the sample username and passcode, and it didn't go past that page, so I assumed maybe it wasn't finished yet. Janice, if you'd let us know, I'm not sure, are we set up over here, the chime when the next person joins in?
I did. I have the chime turned on, so we'll hear them.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Arnon, it's late at night for you, isn't it? About 11 o'clock p.m. for you?
Yeah, it is.
Oh. Burning the midnight oil, huh?
Thank you for joining us.
It's something I do regular. I have changed my schedule to conform whatever I'm working on.
The new world we live in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is nice, though, to be able to just remote desktop and get a lot of the work done.
Yes. And we certainly, in this day and age, hear a lot of cats in the background or dogs barking in the background or some children helping out as the parents are at home.
I want to meet
your business. Our new norm.
Can you not use your headphones? Not use your headphones.
To be honest, if you're really putting in the concentration, then these times of day are actually really pleasing to work in because you do not hear everything in the background.
Yeah, less distractions, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know what's refreshing, guys, is there's definitely... In the past, that would have been seen as a faux pas that you shouldn't allow happen, unprofessional. The reality is there's a human element to it of that we all have families and everybody's got to do what they got to do to make sure things are still getting done at work and the family's being taken care of also. That side of it's refreshing.
Yeah.
For sure. Arnon, what is the situation with the coronavirus like in the Netherlands?
Current infections have turned down to about 4 a week, and death toll per week is turned down to 0 in this location, and for the rest of the country it's about 4 to 10 per week.
Substantially less than
us. Low number.
Yeah, it's a really nice decline in cases and confirmed cases, and yeah, I pretty much said it this way: the coronavirus isn't over, but now we finally have decent capacity in our ICUs.
Nice.
So not only for corona patients, but also for a regular healthcare.
Yeah, it sounds like planning, the Netherlands have been able to help manage it so it doesn't become crushing to the healthcare system.
Yeah, they took it on them to have pretty hard law enforcement to the 6 feet rule.
Okay.
With fines and with, usually a normal talk. And that seemed to have helped a lot. And everything public is pretty much face mask mandatory.
I think that's the direction things are going here. Seeing more and more of it required. We probably would not be seeing these shutdowns again if more people had taken the position to actually wear a mask.
Yeah, we had the same here. I mean, obviously I'm in the UK and they lifted all the ban a bit and now they've had to lock down one of the cities again because it's just started creeping back up.
Yeah, I was just talking with some family members in Edinburgh. I've got some relatives in Edinburgh, Scotland, and they were saying that things are getting shut back down and it's mask required. Makes sense.
That's it.
And Martin, where are you located?
Yep, I'm in the UK.
You're in the UK.
Okay. Rather be there with your weather.
You having bad weather there?
It's always cold and damp. Although it's not been too bad the last couple of days, but it's probably going to get worse again.
Okay. Well, it's summer, isn't it?
about as summer as it gets here. Well, we've had no floods this year, so that's a bonus for the summer.
Where in the UK are you?
I'm like in the central, so Sheffield's probably your main city.
Okay.
I'm just going to see if I can call John, see where he is.
Changing words into funny words game?
Oh, I'm sleepy.
Hey, you know, your father was terrific until the end. Huh?
Yeah, the end was kind of bad.
It's like falling 600 feet to your death. You know, it's fun the first 599 feet. This is the last foot, total sucko.
Yeah, it's a bummer, that last foot. But you know, there's...
It sounds like somebody made it just joined in.
Looks like June has joined in, but we don't have audio yet.
Hello?
Hello, yeah, I'm here. Sorry I'm late a little bit.
That stuff happens, June. We understand. This is Dave Goverdrum, manager here at Switch. How are you today?
Very good, very good.
I believe all the rest of your team are on. June, we're already queued up. So with that, I'm going to have you go ahead and do a round of introductions with names, titles, and responsibilities for your team. And from there, we will introduce the Switch team. So whenever you're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So if you would please, go ahead. So, June, if you go ahead and introduce your team, please.
Hold on. I'm just adjusting my audio here.
Oh, no. Understood.
Okay, let me just introduce myself. My name is June Guevara. I'm the primary contact of LTE Dynamics. I'm here in Vegas now, ready for that installation schedule. I guess I have Martin as well as a business partner of mine. He is currently, I think, Martin, you can introduce yourself, I guess.
Yeah, we already know who I am. I'm Martin. Obviously, I'm working with Britain Connected, consulting, helping Jumwee's network.
Good day.
And I'm Arnon. I would be better named as Hoogie, part of my last name. Everyone knows me as Hoogie. So I am a junior network specialist, and I do design the REC installation, and I have a design for the network itself to have all Yun's devices connected.
Very good. Thank you. And June, is there anybody else for your team that should be on?
Yes, I have my other business partner on with me here, and we're listening on the same audio. You can introduce yourself.
Okay.
Yeah. My name is Minanya Sakibo. I'm business partner and system administrator with FGE Dynamics.
All right.
Also here in Vegas.
Good day. Mm-hmm. And June, is that everybody now?
That's it.
All right. Well, to all of you, thank you very much for joining us today. Again, this is Dave Glover, General Manager here at Switch. Team, if you would, please.
Hello, this is Janice Corcoran, Supervisor of Data Center Services.
Hi, this is Milos Pack, Network Administrator.
And this is Larry Richter, Director of Security.
Thank you, team. Gentlemen, we're going to be breaking today's briefing up into four elements. First is going to be a review of the physical space you're moving into. I'm going to be covering the first portion where we will review details of the cabinet Switch is providing, resources that come with your cabinet. From there, we're going to talk about airflow management, cable management, proper utilization of the power infrastructure, the audit processes you're going to go through from a physical standpoint, and how to coordinate those audits with the Switch team. From there, we're going to go to and several other items. From there, we're going to go to the network portion of the briefing, where we will review items such as IP space, cross connects, access to our customer support web portal, and several other details. So Milos will be covering that portion. And then the security portion, Larry will be covering. And the security portion, he'll be covering items such as the scheduling for the security and processing and facility orientation briefing for your support staff and any vendors that may need to go through that process, and how to coordinate those efforts with the Switch team. Special points of contact from your team and the responsibilities, shipping, receiving to and from the site, and several other items. And then last, in the last portion of today's briefing, I'll be covering that portion where we're going to review your target installation date, as well as the resources that Switch has on site to assist you with your installation and support your operation. Now, if you have any questions at any time, even if it's not during that portion of the subject matter, please sound out. We will address your questions as they come up. Also, during the screen portion, Larry will be going into our COVID quarantine processes for entry of the facilities, in case any of you have those questions. All right, some housekeeping items. We'll get too far into the briefing. After today's call, there'll be a series of emails that will be sent out that will include the point contact names, phone numbers, and email addresses of all Switch members that are on today's call, as well as detailed notes. So if you feel like you've missed some information or some detail, following information will be provided to ensure you have all the resources you need to properly interact with the Switch support teams. This will also include any after-action items identified during today's call. If the audio quality of today's call becomes degraded or hard to understand at any time, please sound out. Do let us know so we can make adjustments as necessary. June, from your team, who will be the senior most person physically on site in charge of the installation of the equipment?
Myself.
Okay. Let me qualify.
Mm-hmm. Myself and. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead. Yourself and who else?
Yeah, myself, and I have two tech guys with me to do all the installation part, and mostly for the remote access is Martin and Hoggy. They're based in UK.
Understood. And we're primarily looking for making sure that we know who the leadership is that's going to be on site associated with the actual installation of the equipment. Well, let me qualify the reason that I'm asking. Once your team goes through your facility orientation and security briefing and gain access to your space, you'll be meeting with one of our data center services engineers. They'll be reviewing with you everything I'm going to talk about today, from an airflow management, cable management, and proper utilization of the power infrastructure. So we will be covering those details on today's call. And then once again, while you're physically standing in front of the space you're moving into, this is to address any outstanding questions you might have, as well as to verify you have a clear understanding of how to properly install your equipment within the acceptable use policies of Switch's T-SCIF environments. So we want to make sure that we've got the right person. So I believe, June, that's going to be you, correct?
That's correct.
So Janice will take your name down, so we need to have our engineers meet with once you get on site and gain access to your space. Thank you for that. And for anybody who joined a little bit later, in the invitation that was sent out, there's an attached PDF document that's included. The title of that PDF document is AR3300 Las Vegas 7 Kickoff Media Agenda. If you have that document, go ahead and open it up to page 3, where you'll see a representation of the cabinet Switch is providing. Sometimes email servers will strip off attachments. Does anybody need just to re-forward that document out to them? Everybody has a copy? Do you have a copy of that document? Okay.
I don't think
I
have
that. Again, we'll
Oh, there you go.
Who would need us to reforward it? Do we need to reforward the documents to anybody?
No, I'm good here.
Yeah, I got it.
Good there? Okay, great. Okay, again, we're starting on page 3, where you'll see a representation of the cabinets which you're providing. We will not be looking at every page of the document, so I will call out specific exceptions as we go through today's briefing. All right, so with that, I'm going to go ahead and get started. I showed you're going to be taking a single cabinet space in our Las Vegas 7 facility. The cabinet that Switch is providing is a custom variant of an APC AR3300 cabinet built to Switch specifications. The key details regarding your cabinet, it is a 42 rack unit type cabinet, and it is configured for 19-inch equipment with standards. Your cabinet is, of course, comes with front and rear perforated locking doors. The front door is a singly perforated door with combination locking. The rear doors are dually doored with center combination locking. Larry will be going into greater details regarding the locking on your cabinet during the security portion of today's briefing. Your cabinet is going to come with a kit of hardware and tools that includes 6 millimeter cage nuts, rack screws, and washers, and 2 tools, an insertion extraction tool for the cage nuts, and a multi-tool. If your team ever finds you need additional hardware past the 60 of each of the hardware that comes with the cabinet, all you have to do is reach out to the Switch support team. We do keep this inventoried on site, and how to contact support will be provided and follow information after today's call. Our team will bring out additional hardware upon request. We always recommend to our clients that they do use the insertion extraction tool for those cage nuts. If you've had experience with those, and I'm guessing your team has with your experience, we don't want anybody getting torn fingernails or cut fingers, leaving a blood trail to the facility. So let's make sure we're using the insertion extraction tool for those, moving those cage nuts around as needed. The multi-tool on one end is a Phillips driver. The other end is a Torx driver. The Phillips driver is used, of course, for the insertion extraction of rack screws. Switch always recommends to its clients that they bring a traditional inline screwdriver or an electric screw gun. These will be much more efficient than the tool that comes with the cabinet. Just know that it is there as a backup. Along with that, you can also check out basic hand tools upon request from the Switch support team. The other end of that multi-tool is a torque driver. The torque driver is used for adjusting the vertical rails inside of your cabinet. Switch does understand there are times and instances where you may need to adjust the vertical rails inside of your cabinet inward to accommodate additional face mounting depth for your equipment and or cable management so that the front door of your cabinet can be closed and secured. We ask that if you do make those adjustments, that you keep the minimum required to accomplish that task. Any questions so far?
No, from my side.
Inside of the cabinet, there are vertical mounting trays towards the back portion of your cabinet. So your cabinet has a total of 4 double width vertical mounting trays located in the back of the cabinet. So 2 in the rear left, 2 in the rear right. So your cabinet can accommodate up to 8 single width zero UPDUs and or vertical cable managers. Gentlemen, those are the details of the cabinet itself. Any questions before we move on to airflow management? No questions?
No questions.
All right. Switch delivers all cooling air capacity from above down the front plane of your cabinet, very much like a waterfall effect. So we cover the entire front plane of your cabinet with cooling air capacity. So anything in front of the front plane of the cabinet is considered to be in the cold air delivery aisle. Anything past the front plane of the cabinet is considered to be inside of the hot air containment aisle. All hot air exhaust in your equipment must be exhausted into the hot air containment aisle. We do not allow any amount of hot air to be exhausted into the cold air delivery aisle. Any unused front-facing cabinet space will require glassing panels to be installed. Switch will provide glassing panels, as many as are needed, at Switch's expense. When your team arrives on day 1 to your cabinet, it is going to be pre-populated with 42 1U APC toolless glassing panels. So there is no hardware to mount or dismount. They just snap in and out of place. So we're going to have you extract the glassing panels needed to accommodate the installation of your equipment. From there, we're going to ask that you contact our support team. We will come out and recover those glassing panels from the workspace. This way, they're not a trip hazard or getting in the way of the installation process. And then, of course, upon completion of the installation of your equipment, we're going to have you contact our support team and let us know how many blanket panels are needed to backfill any unused front-facing cabinet space. Again, those will be provided by Switch at our expense, as many as you're needed. Any questions?
Nothing so far.
Okay. Nothing so far. Okay, thank you. If you have any scenarios where you'll have cables that will need to go from the front of the cabinet to the inside of the cabinet. This scenario is common if you have any equipment that has front-facing copper or fiber data cabling ports four power ports. If any of those cables then need to go to the inside of the cabinet, those cables will be required to pass through some form of a brush strip panel. Brush strip panels will be provided by Switch at Switch's expense, as many as are needed. We have two types of brush strip panels we provide for no cost. Both versions are one vacuum in height. Excuse me. The first type of brush panel we have is a, again, it's one rack unit, has a four-sided metal frame. And imagine, if you will, a 1U blanking panel with the center cut out in the shape of a long oval. Insert brush gasketing for cables to pass through. This version will accommodate approximately 48 Cat 5E dedicatables depending on manufacturer and diameter of cabling. That's the first type of brush panel we have. The second style is a variant of the first, and that is a three-sided version. And the intention of this style is, if you do have a large quantity of cabling or large diameter cabling, you can gang two of the three-sided brush strip panels together to create a larger brush gasket to pass through interface. Now, these brush strip panels are not perfect gaskets at stopping the side drafting of colder into the hotter containment aisle. However, they do go a long way to minimize that effect, and that is why we require their use. Gentlemen, in your deployment, do you know if you'll have any scenarios where cables will need to pass from the front of the cabinet to the inside of the cabinet as part of the installation?
I have designed it to be all at the back, reverse mounted switches with power to front airflow.
Excellent. Okay, gotcha. So that certainly is going to go a long way to help with efficiency. So if you do end up finding that part of your design, you would have to have any cables that will need to go from the front of the cabinet to the inside of the cabinet, that's where these brush strip panels come into play. If those are needed, you can let us know prior to arrival. We will stage those in the bottom of your cabinet prior to arrival so the switch team is not slowing you down. If you figure out how many of those need, once you go to get on site, you reach out to our team. We'll bring those out upon request. Any questions regarding brush strip panels?
No, and I don't think it will be necessary for this setup.
Okay, noted. And we cover some items that may seem redundant or not specifically relevant to your deployment. Our experience over the years has shown that sometimes clients' installations will evolve over time where something may change. We just want to make sure that your team is aware of these protocols that we operate by to operate as efficiently as possible and protect your equipment correctly. So we're definitely not trying to bore anybody, but we do want to make sure we're covering these items. So we talked about blanking panels and brush strip panels now. Now we're going to talk about your equipment and airflow specifically. With that, I'm going to ask if you please turn to page one of the kickoff media agenda. On page one, I'm going to ask that you go to section two, which is the operations section. And then about two-thirds of the way down in the operations section, you're going to see a line identified as exception to front intake, rear exhaust. Let me end it there, please. Do you see that section, exception to front intake, rear exhaust?
I do.
On the bottom page one. Yeah, okay. All right, with this is going to come some dialogue specific to your equipment now. So for we see two scenarios here at Switch. I'm going to start with equipment mounted first on the front of the cabinet, so for vertical mounting rails. So for any equipment that is front to back airflow and only that is the most efficient way for Switch to provide cooling air to your equipment and extract the heat generated by your equipment into our hotter containment aisle so we can efficiently extract it from the facility. Switch does understand and experience, of course, that not all equipment is front-to-back airflow. So starting on the front of the cabinet, what we're looking for here is to find out if you have any equipment that actively, meaning it has a fan that pulls air through it, pulls in any of its cooling air needs past the front plate of the cabinet, which would put it inside the hotter containment aisle. Do you know if you have any equipment in that scenario? Or is everything front-to-back airflow?
Except the two switch, right? Hoggy?
No. I asked real adamant that both switches have a PSU to front airflow and are reverse mounted. So everything in the whole rack should be from the front, so the cold aisle to the hot aisle in terms of airflow.
That is absolutely the preference. So if you were to have to deploy a piece of equipment sometime in the future, as there's still brand new enterprise class equipment on the market that is not front to back airflow. If you were in that situation, we would need to make sure you're getting cooling your routers for those devices, colder intakes. So I'll do the abridged version of this so at least you have an awareness of it in case that comes up. It would be necessary to get cooling your router to the devices in that scenario, colder intake port, as we will not allow you to try and cool your equipment with the hotter in the hotter containment aisle. Obviously, detrimental to the health and longevity of your equipment and causes us to operate our facilities less efficiently. So if that's the case, if you have a piece of equipment in that scenario, it would be necessary to get cooling your router to that device is cold, those devices' colder intakes. And that's through a device you'll see described the very next line as a side air distribution unit. Here at Switch, for short, we call those devices from APC a SADU. Have you any of you used a SADU in your past?
No.
I'll do a brief explanation of a SADU. A SADU is a two-rack unit device from APC. It looks like a server case. It has intake grates on the front where it draws in cooling air from the colder delivery aisle. It has the ability of being configured to route up to 250 cubic feet of cooling air either to the left side or the right side, up or down, depending where the cold intake ports are for equipment to fall into this scenario. If you don't know what the CFM requirements are for any equipment that falls into this scenario, we would ask that you do reference the manufacturer's technical documentation. If you have one or more pieces of equipment in a given cabinet exceed 250 cubic feet of cooling air requirement, that's where a secondary SADU would need to be deployed. How does that work? So you would have a SADU mounted above equipment in this scenario with exhaust port configured pointing down to the equipment below its cold intake ports, and a secondary SADU mounted below that equipment with exhaust port configured and pointed up, adding supplemental additional cooling air capacity. That's definitely the exception to the rule. We've only seen that scenario a couple times over the years, just something to be aware of. If they're needed, you can purchase those through your vendor of choice if you have a relationship with APC elsewhere, or you're welcome to purchase the switch and see the one-time purchase right there on the bottom, page one. So a quick recap on SADUs, two rack into the space per SADU. They are also a dual-ported device. You will consume an outlet on your primary and failover PDUs. So that's the first scenario we see is for when a customer's have equipment on the front vertical rail that pulling cooling air past front of the cabinet. The second scenario we see is when customers elect to mount equipment on the rear vertical rail inside of the cabinet. There's a number of reasons customers will do this, saving some cable length for patch cables or easier to access that equipment mounted close to the rear of the cabinet, whatever those reasons are, it's acceptable. If those pieces of equipment do have active airflow through them, we do need to make sure you're still getting cooling air routed to those devices' colder intakes. And that is through a device that's not with docking in front of you. It's called an air management sleeve. Air management sleeves come in two versions, a one-rack unit version and a two-rack unit version. We have these locally fabricated. Both versions are $100 each. How these work, whatever the rack unit address you would have equipment mounted on the rear vertical rail inside the cabinet secured to, you need to free up the same rack unit address on the front vertical rail, as that is where the rack you're secure to for their manager sleeve. Effectively, these are like a metal ductwork that extends from the front of the cabinet where cold air is delivered, and they extend back to the devices mounted on the rear vertical rail so those devices can draft in cooling air from where it's delivered on the front of the cabinet. If those are needed, you can let us know either during the call or prior to arrival, or we'll catch it during the audit phase, which we prefer it doesn't get to that point because then it typically starts requiring some equipment to get it moved around the rest of the deployment. We try to make sure we avoid those aggravating moments if possible. From there, you would receive a service order from our orders team at orderswitch.com. That's Janice's team. And once we receive a signed service order back for air management sleeves, it's typically around 7 to 10 business days before they show up on our shipping receiving dock for installation. Gentlemen, are there any questions regarding airflow management for SADUs or air management sleeves on the front of the cabinet?
Not from my side.
Not at this time for me.
Okay, absolutely. All right, continuing forward now. Now we're going to move around to the back side of the cabinet. Switch does always ask its clients to make sure they always route all power and data cabling in a neat, orderly, professional manner, both above cabinet and for in-cabinet, the same. We also want to make sure that you're always routing cabling in the cabinet to make sure that it's not blocking or restricting exhaust airflow from your equipment for obvious reasons. Gentlemen, those are all the details for airflow management and cable management. Any questions before we move on to the power portion of the briefing?
Yeah, the back of the rack, you said there were in total, front and back, there were 8 zero-U vertical rails. Is that correct?
So in the back of the portion of the inside of the cabinet, as you would face from the rear in the hotter containment aisle, on the left side, you would see two double wide or double width vertical mounting trays. And on the right rear of the cabinet, there's also two double-width vertical mounting trays. So these cabinets will accommodate up to 8 single-width Zero UPDUs and or vertical cable managers. Does that address your question?
Yeah, that answers everything. Thank you.
If you are interested, I can have Janice include a web link to APC site for all their different cable management solutions they have available for the infrastructure cabinet. Would you like us to do that?
Yeah, it'd be good to get that over. That'd be great.
Okay. We'll have that sent out as part of the information we'll send out after today's call. And if you find one of the models that is of interest, just send that information of the specific model number of cable management back to Janice's team at orders@switch.com. And they will get a price back to you, as we do have a relationship closely with APC, so we've got some pretty decent pricing on APC products. Okay, continue. So that'll be our first after action item. We'll make sure you guys have that link and the follow-up information today. All right, continuing forward now. Any other questions before we move forward on cable management or airflow management before we jump onto the power portion? No?
Again, not at this point.
Okay, I'm going to have you now turn to page 4 of the kickoff media agenda. On page 4, you're going to see a side cutaway view of the cold air delivery side of the T-SCIF. And you will note 4 layers of ladder racking directly above the cold air delivery side of the T-SCIF. So the first layer would be the layer that you would use if you had an adjoining cabinet that you would be extending cabling into. The second layer is the layer we deliver any connectivity services into your cabinet. And the third and fourth layers are the system plus system power architecture layers. And from there, I'm going to ask you now turn to page 5 of the Kickoff Media Agenda, where you're going to see some pictures of do's and don'ts. Let me know you're there, please.
I'm there.
Yep, I'm there.
Though those pictures are not the exact space you're moving into, the message you're conveying is spot on, and that is we do ask that our customers make sure they always route all power data cabling above the cabinet on the back side of the ladder rack layers. Never through the rung of the ladder racking, never on the front side, always on the back side. With that comes a required info cord length for your PDUs. They need to be at least 8 to 10 feet long. I do see your APC PDU info cords are 10 feet long, so these are adequate length to dress in on the back side of the ladder racking and have proper string links as they plug into the twist lock receptacles above. Now, if you have any excess input cord length left over once you dress those cables in, you are welcome to neatly coil those cables, whatever's left of extra cabling, on the top of the cabinet. That way you're not having to consume any in-cabinet space. You're welcome to use that. Customers will sometimes ask tie wraps or Velcro. We think Velcro is the better choice, as it can be used over and over and less likely to damage a cable when cutting off like tie wraps. We've seen customers do some crazy things over time, so we think the Velcro is a better choice. Why does Switch ask its clients to make sure they always route all power duty cabling on the back side of the ladder racking? Well, as you or your neighbors around you order additional new power or connectivity services to Switch, the last thing you would want is for the Switch team to start weaving in and out of your live in production services. So by routing your power data cabling on the backside of the ladder racking, this greatly reduces the possibility of a bad human moment occurring. And we don't like those very much. Any questions?
No.
No questions? Okay. All right. Now on to the power. Now, thank you for that. The power you've ordered for your cabinet, I show you've ordered an L530 primary and an L530 failover circuit for above your cabinet. These are very standard outlets which routinely delivers. We have no questions regarding those power circuits. Gentlemen, do any of you have any questions regarding the power circuits you've ordered for your cabinet?
Not really, just the numbers per rec. So how many 530 connectors or sockets rather does Yun have above his rec?
Oh, so there's going to be 2 L530s and they are failover circuits. Combined you can never exceed 80% breaker capacity, as if it was one circuit, so you can't exceed 80% breaker capacity per National Electrical Code. So on a 30 amp circuit, that gets you 24 amps.
And how many of these connections does Yun have for his rec?
There's 2 L530s that are redundant. Janice, do we know what color systems they're on? Are they on an A and a B or B, a C or a C and an A?
I can tell you in just one moment. Stand by.
Very good. Thank you. So you're going to have two circuits to deliver the bugger cabinet that are redundant pair of each other. So those are two L5, meaning they're 120 volt, 30 amp circuits. So there's a primer and a failover circuit. Looking at that image on page 5 on the do's and don'ts imagery, you'll see an example of what those receptacles look like.
Yeah, I'm thinking that we will exceed the 30 amps power draw.
Understood, and it's actually less than that, as it is delimited to 24
yeah,
amps.
Yeah, 24, yes.
So let me run through, just for your awareness, we deliver routinely many different kinds of power circuits, all the way up to all the different flavors of three-phase circuits, so L15 and L21, 20-amp and 30-amp circuits, 50-amp California standard three-phase circuits, and 60-amp three-phase circuits, both delta and Y connectivity. So we have the ability of delivering pretty much any type of power connectorization that you would need to serve the data center industry. So if you're needing to start looking at the power that you're going to be consuming across your cabinet, right now is the time to get that addressed so you don't end up starting to have problems from as you start the rollout and installation of your equipment. So that'll be our second after action item. I'm going to have Janice work with you and your team regarding what you think your actual power consumption needs are going to be, because that's going to turn into a conversion partially of the contract for the increased energy that your cabinet is going to need delivered to it. And obviously, it's going to take some different PDUs unless you're planning on keeping the existing L530s there and adding additional circuits to the cabinet.
Yeah, I think that was the original plan, to have additional circuits, because there are... for what I know, there are 3, maybe already 4 PDUs ordered and in-house. And so that would be 1 for failover, 1 for main, and that would
primary failover
account to 60 amps, of which 50 amps are usable, or actually 48 are usable.
Yeah. So you're going to want to jump on, if you've already ordered your PDUs, as long as they're the same model number as the first set, the AP7932s from APC, we're going to need to get Janice's team to work up the additional cost of the additional circuits. And with the close proximity of your installation date, we want to get that jumped on as soon as possible. Janice, do you have anything else you would add to that?
No, what I will do is have your account manager reach out to you and go over what you need. I think I understood that you want to keep the existing L530 pair, and then you're going to add an additional pair of another pair of power circuits. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. I'll have our account manager reach out to you and go over the details and the cost with that. The colors in your TSCIF are blue and gray.
So that means you have a B system and a C system delivering the redundant power to your cabinet. So the second set of power connectors that you're going to be placing an order for, those will also be a B and a C. So there'll be a blue and a gray, two blues and two gray receptacles above your cabinets on the separated ladder layers. Do you have any other questions regarding the power you've ordered for your cabinet?
Not from my side.
And not from here either.
Okay, very good. All right, now we're going to talk about power redundancy to your cabinet. There are 3 forms of accepted power redundancy for you to be protected under the 100% SLA for power in your contract. Of those 3 versions, the first version of accepted power redundancy is for devices that have multiple power supplies. I'm going to use a server as an example, where 1 power supply is plugged into primary power, secondary power supply is plugged into failover power. In the event of a single-sided power event occurring, whether from pre-planned maintenance, which you would receive advanced notification from our support team's email address, support@switch.com, or an actual equipment failure causing a single-sided power event, that device would continue operating on the still available source of power. So that is the first form of accepted power redundancy, devices plugged into redundant power sources. Multiple power supply device plugged into redundant power sources. The second and third forms of redundancy are for soon recorded devices. I do show that you have an APC ATS as part of your deployment. The second form of accepted power redundancy is through utilization of compatible, properly configured rack mount automatic transfer switches plugged into redundant power sources. Now, I've said that all with great specificity. First, not all ATSs are compatible with our facilities. The three pre-approved brands of all current models of ATSs are APC, TripLife, and Raritan. If you're to use a brand outside of this three or a non-current model, we would ask that you please do forward the manufacturer's technical documentation to our orders team at orders@switch.com for review by our engineering team to verify compatibility or non-compatibility. So that's the first important item. The second important item is just as important, and that is the ATS once installed in the cabinet, equipment plugged into it, and it's powered up prior to going into production. The sensitivity settings of the ATS are going to need to be set. So we're going to have you contact our support team and request a variety of our data center services engineers to come out and make sure the sensitivity settings of your ATS are properly configured. So that's just as important. The third, of course, is just as important, and that is the... ask customers who deploy ATSs to plan on conducting a twice-a-year power failure audit of these devices that you're relying on. We believe this is a prudent step and appropriate to verify the health and integrity of these devices that you're relying on. If you do not have local logistical resources to support conducting the twice-a-year audit, you can turn to the Switch support team for assistance for a fee. Any questions regarding ATSs?
I believe that it would not be installed in the first phase, but would be implemented in a later phase. The ADS is what I'm talking about.
Understood.
Young would be the contact for that and for that decision.
Noted. Understood. And so what'll happen is that sometimes clients will ask, well, what if we have a device like an out-of-band modem, if you will, like a cable or DSL modem or a dial-up modem? Not that you see those very much anymore. But if you had a device that's single power source and you didn't want to get it plugged into an ATS for single corded devices, when we conduct our audits, so there'll be an initial audit and then we'll conduct follow-on audits through the year. Or if your installation is multi-phase, as you just identified, we'll conduct audits at each of those phases. When we identify equipment that is not plugged in, one of the three forms of power redundancy, so we're not done with that yet. We're going to hear more about that here in a second. We'll actually document that, its location in the cabinet, what the device is, you can see the make and model of it. We'll include that information. And we send that information out to a client to identify that this is not in compliance, that will not be protected under the 100% SLA. Do you want to remediate that situation and make it redundant in some form? Or are you accepting the inherent risk and it will not be protected under the 100% SLA? That's how we address that for customers who choose not to protect something under the three forms of SLA protection, accepted forms. Any other questions regarding ATSs? No?
No.
The third form?
No.
Okay. The third form of accepted power redundancy is through duplication of devices. I'm going to use two security devices as an example, where one security device is plugged into primary power, secondary security device is plugged into failover power. Assuming these devices are configured to accomplish the same result in a failover event, one of those two devices would continue operating, ensuring delivery of your services. Gentlemen, those are the three forms of accepted power redundancy. Any questions?
No.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. All right. The next item we're going to talk about is the physical audit you're going to go through upon completion of your installation prior to going into production. All client installations are required to go through a post-installation audit and power failure audit. Switch does recognize that not all installations are the same. Some installations are all equipment in all in at once. Some installations are multi-phase. If your installation is multi-phase, we will conduct these audits many times as necessary. There is no additional cost or services associated with these audits. Switch does ask its clients to also contact us 24 to 48 hours in advance to schedule these audits. This allows the Switch team ample time to ensure we have the engineering resource available when you need us. Now, we do understand our industry. Sometimes things come up where something's got to be done in a hard press for time. So with that, as we are horrible mind readers, we need you to communicate that information to us so we're not having to guess, so that we can act on the information you're providing to us and we can act on it to address whatever the need at the time. So with that, once you set the appointment, if you get done earlier than originally projected, you are welcome to contact our support team and see if there's an earlier available appointment if you want to. If we do have an earlier available appointment with one of our engineers, we will absolutely accommodate you. It is technology, though. Sometimes things come up, we understand. So if you need to make adjustments to the scheduled appointment, please do keep our support team updated if we need to adjust their time out to a later time so that we can make adjustments to our engineer schedule. Once our engineer does come out to meet with your team, so a representative of your team will need to be there when we conduct this audit. We will begin the audit on the front side of your cabinet. Now, the checklist of items I'm about to go through will be included in the following information that Janice will be sending out today. So you'll have a reference document of the things we looked for. Now, before I go farther into what we go that checklist is, if at any time your team has any questions on best practices or the way something needs to be done in switch environments, please do reach out to us. You've selected us as your business partner. That's what we're here for, is to make sure you're getting the information you need so everything goes as smooth as possible. So please reach out to us. We prefer to help you reduce any aggravating moments. So with that, the audit steps that we're going to walk through now are the things we check for when we conduct these audits. We'll begin the audit on the front side of your cabinet. We'll first begin with verifying that any unused front-facing cabinet space has blanking panels. We'll verify anywhere where cabling passes from the front of the cabinet to the inside of the cabinet, those cables pass through some form of a brush strip panel. We'll verify that none of your equipment is exhausting hot air into the cold air delivery aisle. We're going to look at the vertical rails of your cabinet. If they have recessed inward to accommodate additional face mounting depth, the engineer will be placing the order with the switch seal containment team to install seal containment kits in the vertical gaps that are created when the vertical rails are recessed, so we can make sure we're not wasting any air conditioning capacity into the hotter containment aisle. At this time, we also check to make sure no cabling passes through the vertical gaps, as we didn't allow any type of cabling to pass the vertical gaps when they are recessed. From there, we will get out a ladder and go above your cabinet, verify that all power data cabling above your cabinet has been routed in a neat, orderly, professional manner, that it's all been routed on the backside of ladder racking. And we're also going to check those L530s to verify they're all fully seated and twist locked into the receptacles above. From there, we're going to go around to the backside of your cabinet, verify that all in-cabinet cabling has also been installed in a neat, orderly, professional manner, and that none of it is blocking or restricting exhaust airflow from your equipment. From there, we're going to check out your equipment to see if any of your equipment is actively drawing in any of its cooling air needs past the front plate of the cabinet. If we do identify any equipment in that scenario, we'll be looking for one or more cider distribution units, or SEDUs, or air manager sleeves routing cooling air to those devices' colder intakes. From there, we're going to take a look to see how your equipment's been plugged in, verifying that everything's been plugged in one of the three forms of power that I described earlier. Once we've completed these steps, then we'll begin the power failover portion of the audit. What that entails, we're going to turn off the primary circuit breakers to your cabinet. We'll do this one breaker at a time. And what we're looking for is that everything in the cabinet continues to operate that should be associated with those circuits. And circuit that will have the ATS on it, we'll also check to verify the ATS is showing that it just transitioned to the secondary source and the primary source is no longer showing available. Once we verify these items, we'll then re-energize the primary source circuit breakers, wait ample time for your PDUs to go through the reboot sequence. We'll go and check the ATS to show the primary source is back available, and we will duplicate that process on the secondary source or sources. This will be your initial physical inspection power failure audit. As you add additional pieces of equipment over the years, whether it's a one-off piece of equipment or full technology upgrades of all the equipment, say 3, 5, 7 years out, whatever your business cycle is for your equipment, it is required these audit processes are adhered to. Now, if you're replacing an existing device that was previously audited, say for warranty purposes, the new device will need to be audited. So you are welcome to do that audit yourself, or if you're more comfortable having our switch team member come out and be a part of that audit, it's as simple as contact support requesting an audit for a single device. Sometimes clients will ask, well, Dave, how would we conduct the audit on that single device? Obviously, your team will never be able to gain access to the mission-critical circuit breakers that feed the data center space, nor would we ever expect a customer to shut down whole sides of power for testing a single device. So, of course, you're going to do this at the single device layer. So once the replacement piece of equipment is re-wrapped and installed and powered up and prior to going to production, you would turn off one power supply if it's got power switches, or if there's no power switches, you would unplug the associated power supply at the associated PDU outlet. Once you verify the device continues to operate on the secondary power supply, you re-energize the primary power supply and duplicate that process on the secondary power supply. Gentlemen, are there any questions regarding the audit processes or how to coordinate these services with the switch team?
Not at this moment for me.
No, not from my side.
Okay, thank you for that. And again, the checklist of items I just went through, you will have a copy of that that list of the things we audit for in the following information Janice will be sending out, so you'll have a reference document. Please do follow up with any questions you may have on that or anything else. All right, the next item is also, it's associated with your equipment specifically. Whether you were drop shipping your equipment to the facility or hand carry equipment to the facility, can be processed into our facility by our security operations support staff. They are the team that manage all shipping and receiving needs to and from our sites. The area where you will receive your equipment back in security is called customer staging. In the customer staging area, we have multiple equipment test benches with the most common types of outlets in our industry, include the types of outlets that you've ordered for above your cabinet. Now, these outlets in this area are backed up by generator, not by UPS. What we're going to ask you to do in this area is to depackage all shipping materials off your equipment, set those materials off to the side. The switch staff will process those materials out of the facility from there for recycling purposes. If you need to keep any shipping materials, you'll be briefed on that process when you go through your security orientation and facility briefing. Once your equipment is depackaged of all shipping materials, we're going to ask you to conduct a power on test of your equipment. Everything gets tested, PDUs, ATSs, network appliances, security appliances, out-of-band modems. If you have a blade chassis, it's the chassis itself that needs to be tested, as that's where the power supply section is. The blades themselves do not need to be tested. Everything gets tested in this area with the following exceptions: storage arrays, equipment with existing databases, fully populated cabinets. We're going to get to those here in just a moment. So once your equipment is depackaged of all shipped materials, we're going to ask you to plug your equipment in and turn it on. Your devices are not required to go through a full boot sequence. What they must do is they must turn on. They must not trip a circuit breaker or emit any amount of smoke or sparks. As long as your equipment meets these criteria, we are satisfied your equipment is healthy to operate on our critical infrastructure on the data center floor. At that point, you're welcome to use the staged transportation carts that are in this area for your use to move the equipment off the data center floor to begin the installation process. Any questions regarding the power testing in the test bench area?
No.
All right. The caveats that talked about storage arrays, equipped with existing databases and fully populated cabinets. We do have a process that will allow that type of equipment to be tested on the data center floor. What is required is that one of our engineers be present when those type of devices are plugged in and turned on for the first time in our facilities. Gaining access to one of our engineers is as simple as contacting support, identifying a need for power on test on the data center floor, and then we'll coordinate the engineer's time. Once there, the engineer will watch as the device or devices get plugged in and turned on for the first time in our facility. At that point, the test is just like back in the test bench area. We want to see the devices actually do turn on, but they do not trip a circuit breaker or emit any amount of smoke or sparks. As long as they meet these criteria, we are satisfied your equipment is healthy to operate on our critical infrastructure. Any questions regarding these processes or how to coordinate these efforts with the switch team?
No, from my side.
No.
Okay, pretty straightforward. One last item for this section of the briefing, your equipment specifically. Gentlemen, is all the equipment brand new or is some of the equipment coming from an existing operational facility or a combination of the two?
Combination.
All right, so please don't be offended by the question I'm about to ask. For any equipment that's coming from an existing operational facility, if there's any contaminants that have built up on or in the equipment, we would ask if you could please take an opportunity to clean those contaminants before bringing the equipment to our facilities. We do, however, understand when projects like this are going on, it's about getting the equipment into the new location as quickly as possible, getting it up and running. So if you don't get a chance to clean any contaminants, if there are any, once you get to our test bench area, we're going to ask that you check out with our support team, one of our switch HEPA anti-static vacuum cleaners we have available for customers to use to clean those contaminants before bringing the equipment up to the active data center floor. Now, as your equipment operates in our facilities over the years, as human beings walk past the front of your cabinet over time, whether it's human skin or human hair or clothing lint that sloughs off of those individuals, at some point, some of that possibly could show up on the intakes of your equipment. Now, Switch takes a great effort in maintaining cleanliness of our facilities, so we're going to maintain the cleanliness of the front perforated door space that, where the cold air is delivered to your cabinet. That's where it's going to show up first, if any of it's going to show up, as we do a lot of cleaning processes in our facilities. If any of it ends up starting to show up on the intake of your equipment, we do ask that our customers take an active participating role in maintaining the cleanliness of your intakes of your equipment so your equipment can operate as efficiently as possible. Now, we don't allow our customers to use compressed air or their own vacuum cleaners. We do ask that you do check out one of Switch's HEPA anti-static vacuum cleaners to maintain the cleanliness of your intakes if needed. Now, as you're using our vacuum cleaners, If you end up vacuuming up something you didn't intend to vacuum up, some hardware, a GBIC, a wedding ring, please do not ever open up a vacuum cleaner on the active data center floor. Do contact our support team, request for us to come out and get the vacuum cleaner, and we will bring it to an appropriate location outside of the data center floor to get your property recovered and returned to you in a timely fashion. Gentlemen, any question on this or anything I've covered?
No.
No, good.
All right. Thank you. Well, we appreciate your time through all of that. I know it can be somewhat dry and seem redundant sometimes, but we want to make sure those items are covered. With that, we're going to go to Milos for the next portion of the briefing. Milos, take the lead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Glover. Hello, everyone. Again, my name is Milos Pack. I'm one of the network administrators here at Switch. I will be going over the contacts you notated in the engineering document. First, we will start with the SWIP contact. This will be used as the contact for IP space assigned to you and is publicly available on Aaron's website. And I see that you have notated office at LTEDdynamics.com. Is that still accurate?
That's correct.
Perfect. Next, we'll go into the notification contacts. This will be used for notifications from us about maintenances. And I have office at LTEDynamics.com, June at Guevara.com, and Martin at BritainConnected.uk or .co.uk. Is that still accurate?
That's accurate.
Excellent. Yep. Lastly, is the authorized domain. This will indicate which email domain is authorized to open support tickets. And I have LTEDynamics.com and BritainConnected.co.uk. Is that still accurate?
That's the two domain. That's correct.
Perfect. Next, I'll go into the IP blend internet option that you selected with us. And I see that you selected a 10 gig multi-mode fiber connection, single link. Is that still accurate?
Poggy, do you have any comments on it?
I'm actually at this moment conversing with Martin whether or not
on this order.
Sorry, can you repeat that one more time, Janice?
Yeah, I apologize for interrupting. There's no bandwidth on this order, so I don't know what you're looking at, but there's no bandwidth on this order.
Because I was looking at on page, it looks like it was selected as a single connection for fiber 10 gig on the document itself. But if there's no order, then disregard. I'll skip it.
Yeah, I see it on here.
Okay. And Hoagie, you were in the middle of saying something as well.
Yeah, I was conversing with Martin here. If I am emailing or if I am having questions through the BritainConnected.co.uk would be authorized, correct?
Yes. Yes, as long as it's those two email domains, we can respond accordingly.
Well, then I know enough. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Excellent. Since you guys aren't getting IP connectivity with us, I will go over this portion just briefly. For all of our customers who do have connectivity with us through our very own IP blend, we do offer additional address space up to a /25 on AS23005. And we do have a process on how to allocate space to you through an IP justification process. In addition to, we do offer IPv6 as well. And there is no IP justification process for that. Any additional questions regarding IP blend options or IP justification?
Martin, have you got that noted? For the upgrade?
Yep, yeah, that's all fine. I don't think it's needed now, but it's certainly something that will be assessed later on.
Okay, so sounds good. Moving on, I'll go into cross connects. Switch considers all connectivity delivered within our facility as a cross connect. We deliver all cross connects to a 1U 24-port demarcation panel, typically installed to the hot outside of the cabinet in the uppermost rack unit available, but can be placed elsewhere if requested. These modular DMARC panels are capable of handling any type of connection from fiber to copper to coax. Switch supplies the terminations and modules, and we test all cross connects before handing them off to you. In the event you have multiple connections and multiple cabinets, we can deliver these connections to any one of those locations. Just let us know ahead of time where you'd like the connections delivered, and we will work with you to get them where you need them. The reason we deliver connectivity this way is to ensure that everything is installed in a clean, simple, and easy to identify manner, and so that in the future, should you order additional connectivity, we won't have to weave in and out of in-production gear or cabling. Any additional questions regarding our cross-connects?
No, I'm good here.
Excellent.
Good here.
Next, I'll go into our customer support process. Customer support can be reached in three ways, via phone, email, or the switch portal. When contacting support via the phone or email, you will be required to provide your security passcode, which you should have set up in the kickoff call documentation. Security will also cover this more in their portion later on in the call. Please ensure that whoever is contacting support has the security passcode available, as support will not be provided without it. The switch portal is a web page that can be used to do a number of things like check bandwidth and power utilization, track packages shipped to the facility, and open and check the status of support tickets. When a support ticket is opened through the switch portal, you are not required to provide your security passcode, as every portal user is individually authenticated. After this call, your team will receive a support contact audit email. You can then reply to this email with full names and emails of people you would like portal accounts created for, and our support team will gladly get those created for you. In case you may need smart hands or remote hand support, we have support staff available 24/7 on each of our campuses. To receive smart hand support, just contact support and let them know you'd like to open up a smart hands ticket. They'll work with you to get the details of your request and get it completed as soon as possible. Smart hand support costs $150 an hour in 1 hour increments unless your contract specifies an alternate rate. Any additional questions regarding support, the switch portal, or smart hands?
Okay. Yeah, I'm good.
Lastly for me is our switch courtesy wireless. We do provide customers with courtesy wireless internet inside the data center. Some customers within their assigned data center space may opt to install a wireless access point of their own. To avoid interference with the wireless canopy switch has put in place, if you do install a wireless AP, we ask that any broadcasted SSIDs be unique to the area and that you configure it to only operate on channel 1 or channel 36. Any additional questions regarding the courtesy wireless?
No. You said channel 36? Okay.
Channel 1 or channel 36.
Okay.
As there are no further questions, I'll hand the call over to Director of Security, Larry Richter.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry about that. Go ahead, Jim.
Martin, just a question quick for Martin. For the Britain Debt Connected, you're just going to add Hoggy email on that so he can be on the support if he need to ask questions for the support. I'm gonna...
Yeah, that's fine. It'll be authorized through our domain, so that's all taken care of.
All right. Okay, we're good.
I would like to have my email address also in as a login for their for switches.
Right. So is that possible? We can add Hoggy that like right now, so we'll not have any confusion later on, because it's pretty much doing all the remote networking configuration side
to the portal.
Yeah,
sure. I've added him to my notes, and then our team will get those created for him. Is it just Hoggy that you want? Is there anybody else?
Yeah, myself, Hoggy, and Martin. Yeah.
Okay, everybody that's on this call. Perfect. Okay. I'll send that off to the team and we'll get those created for you shortly after.
I have another question. As I know right now, the IP address range is purchased through or rented.
Through Cogen, yeah. Go ahead.
Is there any way that Switch could assist me in the first configuration or in an example configuration so I know what I'm doing on the machines themselves?
We don't provide consulting services. We do have some vendors that we could direct you to, especially since it's Cogent, Cogent service that you guys are coming in. Our team may be able to get you in touch with Cogent thems. Are you getting the circuit through Switch or directly from Cogent?
That's also a big question that I need to ask for my account manager on Switch, but as far as I know, it's just directed to Cogent.
I see. I'm not sure on Cogent's policies on assisting with configurations. You can ask them, but as far as Switch goes, we do not provide those types of consulting services. And like I said prior, we do have vendors that we could point you in the direction to, and you can open up a communication with them.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
I'd have to look into it, but would you like to receive notifications on those vendors?
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Are there any additional questions with the network portion of the briefing?
And from my side, you have any additional hobby?
Not at this point.
Okay. Then in that case, if there are no further questions, I'll hand the call over to Director of Security, Larry Richter.
Okay.
Thank you. Again, my name is Larry Richter. I'm the Director of Security at NAP7. Everything I'll be covering here, I'll be sending a follow-up email. If you have any questions during my portion, just feel free to stop me at any time. So the first thing we're going to cover is the role of security points of contact, also known as SPOCs. So here at Switch, we utilize security points of contact for all security-related correspondence to our customers. All requests for access to your space, along with requests for security-related information, must be made by an SPOC. SPOCs may be updated at any time by a current SPOC email and security management. All SPOCs share the same role and the same authorization ability. However, the difference between them is the primary has the final say for you in the event of any confusing or conflicting requests. Secondaries may not remove or override the primary. However, the secondaries can remove each other when and if needed. Now, should the primary ever leave the company, it is recommended they remove themselves prior to their departure and appoint a new primary by sending an email to security management. Otherwise, Switch will have to turn the sign of the contract with Switch or a C-level executive within your company to assign a new primary. Now we'll move on to the security code, which touched on a little bit earlier. Again, the security code is used by your team when contacting Switch support either via email or by phone. Anyone from your company contacting Switch support will need to have the security code for authorization purposes. It is the responsibility of the SPOCs to send that code to your staff in order to get assistance from Switch support. If at any time the security code needs to be changed, one of the SPOCs can send an email to security management and we'll get that code changed for you. Any questions so far?
No questions from my side.
All good.
All clear.
Ready. Moving along to access. So requests for granting access or removing access for your employees and any third-party vendors you may use can only come from a designated SPOC, and that email should be sent to security management. When adding individual security, we'll need to know if it's temporary or permanent access, and if temporary access is needed, we'll need to know specific times and dates, if it's unescorted or escorted access will work inside your area, whether or not they are allowed access to receiving, whether or not they're allowed to remove equipment on your behalf, and whether or not they're allowed to bring in guests. Those instances typically are reserved for third-party vendors, EMC, NetApp, depends on what equipment you have, if you need somebody that's a third-party vendor to come work on your equipment. If it's for permanent access, that's generally for your team. You'll need to set up an orientation and badging session, and that'll need to be scheduled at least 48 hours in advance. Our orientations are conducted Monday through Friday during normal working hours. It will take approximately 1 hour to complete. If a weekend or after-hours orientation is needed, just let us know. We'll coordinate with you as we can. One thing at the end of the call, you'll be getting a lot of emails, one of which you'll be getting a portal account. So all the SPOCs will be getting portal accounts. Attached to that portal account will be a customer orientation module and a vendor module. So if you want to schedule your orientation through the portal, you can do that. Also, if you want to schedule any third-party vendor work that needs to be done, like I said, the EMC or NetApp individuals, you can do that through the portal, or you can always email security management and we can coordinate that way as well. So moving along to shipping and receiving. So normal hours of operation are from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. However, security is available 24/7. If you have any large deliveries arriving after hours, just please send us a courtesy email to security management so we can ensure we have the appropriate team members on hand to assist. Now, for any deliveries arriving after hours, you'll be billed for the delivery at $250 per pallet. That's a per pallet delivery. So if you have a small hard drive, RAM module, something like that that comes at 3 a.m. by a courier, there's no charge for that. Just anything that actually arrives on a pallet. So when deliveries arrive at our facility, we'll take them into our accountability and they'll be temporarily stored and receiving until they're picked up by your team for installation. For any packages that have not been picked up after 60 days of storage, you'll then be billed for the space being occupied receiving at $35 a square foot. The reason for that is we want to treat our shipping and receiving areas as a temporary storage space and not a permanent one. So when sending deliveries to the facility, please ensure all packages are addressed, switched, petitioned, your company name, so we can process that equipment in your company. If you want to add a personal name to the package, that's completely fine. Please ensure your company name is still on it. If we receive any packages or solely addressed to switch, or there are two conflicting company names on the package, we'll process that equipment under switch, and he can provide tracking documentation proving that equipment's for you. We provide carts to take equipment to and from receiving, but if you have any equipment that's too large or too heavy that cannot fit on a switch provided cart, switch personnel will move that for you. The reason for that is we want to minimize damage to the facility and the equipment itself. If you ever have anything like that, just let our receiving team know. They'll contact the appropriate team members to come out and give you a hand. Any questions so far?
No.
Nope, okay.
All right, so now we'll move on to access control. Since you'll be installing a shared TSCIP environment, basically what that means is multiple customers will have access to the same area. And since you'll be utilizing one of our cabinets, we'll be installing a 3-digit combination lock on that cabinet. The code of the cage and the cabinet will be provided to you during your orientation. If at any time the cabinet code needs to be changed, an SDOC will need to shoot an email to security management so we can change the code. One thing we ask you is do not attempt to change the code yourself. Now, there may come a time where you want to install cameras in your space to look to see who's opening your cabinet doors, who's anywhere near your cabinet. That's perfectly fine. We just have some guidelines that you need to follow. The view of the camera cannot include neighboring cages, cabinets, or equipment. Pan, tilt, zoom cameras are not authorized. We provide the camera mounting plates to attach to the ladder rack at a cost of $15 each. You just need to shoot an email to orders@switch.com if you need those. We ask the cameras not be zip tied to the ladder rack or any other infrastructure. We also ask the cabling be installed in a neat, tidy manner using provided cable pathways. And finally, we will review and approve the provided camera layout prior to installation and approve the views after installation. When you're ready, if you need to do that, just shoot an email to security management and we will review as we need to. So the last portion I'm going to cover is the COVID issue we have in the world right now. So we have some requirements when you enter the facility. We here at Switch follow the CDC guidelines and also directives from the state of Nevada. Requires masks to be worn by everyone that enters the facility. Obviously the 6-foot rule, maintains 6 feet away from other individuals. Also frequent washing of hands, no touching the face, no shaking hands, no physical contact with anyone. As you enter the facility, once you check in, my security officers will ask you a series of 4 questions. Basically just talk about your health and health of others around you. Once you come inside of the man trap, you'll be required to use a screen that takes your temperature. As long as you're within standards, there's no issues. And on top of that, we also have hand sanitizer throughout the facility. And also our team goes through and is constantly wiping down doors, biometric readers, pretty much anything that anybody touches is constantly being wiped down. So do you have any questions over anything I've covered or anything else security related?
No, I'm good.
Yep, okay from here.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate your time. I welcome you to Switch, and I'll hand the call back to Mr. Glover. Dave?
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. This is Dave Glover rejoining. Thank you, gentlemen. All right, a couple last items to cover now. First is a review of the target installation date. For Switch, the target installation date is the date we will have your cabinet built out, ready for your use to include the power rewarder for your cabinet, and any connectivity service rewarded through Switch will also be in place and ready for use. It's also the billing start date. I show the target installation date as Monday, July 20th. Is that your understanding?
That's correct.
Do you have any other questions regarding the target installation date?
No further questions from my side.
Okay, very good. The next item we're going to review are the resources that Switch has on site to assist you with your installation and support your operation. In each of our facility sectors, we maintain multiple resources for our clients. These items include fiberglass ladders to assist you with your installation and support your operation. There are mobile crash carts. These are mobile keyboard mouse monitor stands. There's also mobile light stands if you need additional lighting. There are server lifts for any heavy lift items that may need to be installed. I would ask that if you find you need to use a server lift for any heavy lift items, that you also please consider reaching out to the Switch team for assistance. The last thing we would want is for you and your support staff to become injured, your equipment become damaged, or our facilities become damaged. So please do reach out to us for assistance with any heavy lift items. There are convenience outlets located in the T-Skiff space. In your T-Skiff, they'll be located just as you walk into the hotter containment aisle door at each end of the hotter containment aisle portion of the T-Skiff. So you'll look up and you'll see the convenience outlets located there right as you walk in the door. Now, these convenience outlets are backed up by generator, not by UPS. So they are for short-term applications such as plugging in the monitor on the mobile crash cart, the light on the mobile light stand, recharging laptops, cell phones, electric screwdrivers, and such. There are waste receptacles located in every sector, as every installation operation over the years will have some amount of bits and pieces of cut-off plastic packaging or tire rack or Velcro, whatever those waste materials are. We do ask that our customers take an active participating role in maintaining the cleanliness of the facility, so these materials do not get kicked or blown under your cabinet or the neighboring spaces around you. And we'll make sure everybody's a good part of the community. As you heard earlier, we do have Wi-Fi coverage for your convenience while in the facility. Along with that, we've also installed a cellular repeating system to improve your experience when using cellular communications at the sites. Our experience over the years has shown that Verizon and Sprint have a stronger signal strength, and AT&T and T-Mobile have a weaker signal strength in the facility. Just something to be aware of. When it's time to take a load off your feet, we do have multiple break rooms in the Las Vegas 7 facility. And the break rooms are appointed with seating at tables and chairs. There are vending machines with basic snacks and drinks, and there's also places to plug your recharge laptops and cell phones. Several of the break rooms also have some very comfortable couches to kick that in back at as well. Also, we have private office spaces. If you have a need for private office space, we call our private office spaces day use offices. Our day use offices are appointed with a desk, chairs, speaker telephone, and internet access. And we also allow our clients to book time in our conference rooms. So if you have a larger gathering for a presentation, say with a vendor or a customer, or a training session with a vendor, whatever it might be, our conference rooms are a perfect place for some of these applications. Our conference rooms are appointed with seating for up to 20 at tables. There are flat panel displays with computer with internet access, speaker telephones, whiteboards, and refrigerators always stocked with cold, fresh water. How do you go about gaining access to use the day use offices or the conference room? You would submit an email to our support team with the date and time frames you would like to use the space for. Now, like most things in life, it's better to submit requests as early as possible, as these spaces are routinely scheduled for. From there, our team will respond back to other approvers and I based on availability. There is no additional cost or service fees associated with the use of these spaces. Any questions?
No question.
On-site storage needs. As you'll be in a shared T-Skiff space with other customers, we do have a solution for on-site storage needs for customers in this scenario, and that is through the issuance of a lockable plastic storage tote bin and a combination paddle lock. This storage solution will be placed on a roll-around wire rack and kept within the cage space where your cabinet is located. These can be used for managing spare resources you might want to keep on site, like patch cables, basic hand tools, spare parts. There is no additional cost or service fee associated with the use of these storage solutions. Is that of interest to your team?
Okay.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? It got cut off.
Yeah. It's okay.
You would like one of those? Are you saying yes, you would like one of those, or you're not interested? June?
Yeah. What is that again?
Are you saying that you want one of the storage tote bins, or you're not interested in having a storage tote bin?
No, I do need that storage.
You do. I want to make sure I was clear on what you're asking. Okay, perfect. So we're going to add that as an after action item to today's notes. Once you get in process and access to your space, one of our team members will be bringing the storage tote bin and combination lockout to you.
That's right.
To that. Mm-hmm. Very good. That's all the things we cover. So we know we cover a lot of ground. Is there anything we've overlooked or did not address for you today?
I just want to check one thing. It may have or may not have been mentioned, but when you're on at the rack, is there any policy about, you know, making a phone call or anything like that? Do you have to go away or can that be done there?
It can be done right there at the cabinets. That's very common that our customers will be on a tech support call or a phone call somewhere in the world. Now, what you can't expect is privacy if there's other customers or staff around you. So that's where you can go to a break room, that's where you also could check out one of the day use offices if you need to have a private conversation or do some troubleshooting away from the background noise of the data center on a conference call. The day use offices are a perfect place where you can conduct calls like that. But yes, you can, to answer your question specifically, yes, you can have phone calls out of the data center.
That's fine. I was just thinking if we had like a technician at the rack or something doing something, we could just call in and speak to them while they're fiddling around with some cables or something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We see our customers routinely do that, whether they're calling back to some other location or a manufacturer support mechanism. So, yeah, that you'll see that definitely occur across the span of our customer base, across our facility. So, yes.
Cool. Thank you.
If any of you have not taken an opportunity to do so, do go to the Switch website, switch.com. Check out our homepage. Check out our webpage as a whole. Some things of interest at the top, you can click on Gallery. And from there, there's either photos or videos. You can check both out. Under photos, you're absolutely going to see photographs of the inside of our facility and some of our other customer installations. So I use that as a reference. If you have any questions that spurred from that, please do reach out to us. We'll be more than happy to address your question. So check that out. The other link there is to check out a robotics button, as we are developing a robotic product that will be part of our service delivery in the future. So very exciting times. Is there anything else we can cover or anything we missed in reviewing today?
I think okay from my side.
Yeah, I'm good from my side.
I have to check with the team to get the IP sorted and the network configuration sorted out. And I'm clear that in this case, Switch cannot assist me in that. Just want to verify that is correct.
I believe the dialogue is that it sounds like potentially you're purchasing a bandwidth circuit directly from Cogent. And since Cogent's obviously a third-party service provider. If you're looking for support from them, then you would need to turn to them. Now, Switch is negotiating bandwidth circuits from a carrier for you. That's where our team has the ability of being a part of that dialogue, and so it's to some degree a part of the service element to support it. Milos, is there anything, or Janice, is there anything you would add to that?
No, that's pretty much
not
it.
Not at all.
Okay. And does that address your question?
It was not a question per se. It was more a observation that in this case, I had a email conversation with one of your employees earlier, I think okay. last month, where he yeah. said that a connectivity team could lead me on my way and the first steps. I mean, obviously, I can configure it, but this is my first time working with Cogent and my first time working with a Switch, so that is a little bit new to me.
So, no. I can probably chime in a little bit. I don't know exactly what specific service you got from Cogent, because I know all these carriers will have assisted services or like Sonnet and Rings and everything. But if you're just getting a simple MPLS or point-to-point, because I did used to work for the team where we did I worked for the core team where we would assist customers with getting their services up. But a part of that is if we would get you in contact with Cogent during an activation time, but that's only if you did order the service directly through us. But from the calls that I've been on with the carriers and past customers, they seem like very basic configurations, whether you were using BGP or just a simple like a slash 30 /30 network, where you have one IP and then Cogent has another IP. That's only if you get like a specific service with them. And I don't think the configuration should be too complicated. So
that means that I would need to contact Cogent before installation date or before delivery date to get that all cleared out.
Correct. If I remember correctly, Cogent was one of the carriers where you could call into their NOC where you didn't have to have an appointment set up with them. But level 3 is really strict. You need to notify them 48 hours in advance, and same thing with CenturyLink. I don't recall Cogent being so strict, but like all things, it's really good to have planned that in advance. But again, if you did order that directly through us, then our team would schedule that activation for you. But if you bypassed Switch and you are working directly with Cogent, then you would have to do that process on your own. And as far as for configuring the services, whether you worked directly or ordered it directly through Cogent or ordered it through us, we still do not provision the services. That is between you and Cogent. Or whatever carrier you ordered through.
All right, so then this is a question for Jun. Please get that information to me before the installation date so I can accustom the setup and configurations.
Yeah, I'm going to work on that. As well, I'm going to consider as well to get through Switch directly. I'm going to work on that as well. So we'll check it out. I'll let you know.
Now, Hoagie, I do have one question for you. What is your email? So that way I can pass this to my team to get you the portal account. And on top of that, so I could send you an email notification on consulting vendors that we have for your reference.
Can you share that email?
Okay,
would I put it? Yeah, sorry. I was muting myself. Would I put it down in chat for your convenience?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Milo.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you, sir.
Gentlemen, is there anything else we can attend to before we finish the call today?
Let me jump in here quickly. I do see that we have an order that was provisioned through, or it looks like you've been working with one of our connectivity team members for a 10 gig service with Cogent, but provisioned, procured through Switch. I do see that we have that order here, and if you're looking for specific guidance on how to do the network configuration, we can provide to you the names of the vendors that can do that kind of consulting work if needed. Our team can give you some basic configuration information, but we're not sure exactly what all information you're looking for. If you let us know, then we can see if our core connectivity team has that information available for you, or where to need to refer you out to a third-party consultant.
Yeah, like I said before, basically just either I don't know if this is a just a /26, I believe it was, or 27. I will be configuring a firewall, and everything behind the firewall will be pretty much local. So I only need to know how the firewall connects to those IP addresses and use them. So gateway configuration, network, and mask. Well, mask is always, but the rest of it.
So in that instance, whenever the circuit's done, again, only speaking from experience, our account rep should be receiving that information from Cogent, and they should be passing it off to you with those three IPs, the default, the subnet, and the you're actually allocated IP. So that would come through the account rep.
Okay. Yeah, because as far as I know, we opted out of BGP. That would be a simple configuration.
Excellent. Did the team have any additional questions for us?
No, but I like to extend my gratitude. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Did you get your questions answered on the configuration issue, or would you like me to have Mike Gregory, who was your account manager that you worked with from the connectivity team, would you like me to have him reach out to you, or did he address all the questions that you had?
Just to be sure, I would like to get in contact. Yes.
Okay. I'll ask Mike to reach out to you and just confirm any information that you still may need.
Again, thank you very much.
You bet.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, gentlemen. With that, we want to extend a welcome to the Switch community. We're looking forward to working with all of you. If you do end up having any questions after today's call ends, please do route your questions back to us. We will get responses back to you in a timely fashion. Also, please watch out for the other emails you've been hearing about us talk about. Do respond to those emails. We want to make sure every effort is being made towards delivering successful installation and transition to a successful operational mode. So with that, we want to say thank you very much for all of your time. Great.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Have a good
day. All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.